The thing that bumped it up to number one this year was the invasion by the Ethiopian troops and the complete breakdown of all security. And that had an impact both on the political military indicators, the economic indicators, and so forth.
I noticed that on your list this year, Kenya rose to number 26. Kenya is hurt by demographic pressures this year, population growth, displacement of people, and ethnic rivalry. How has the election controversy in Kenya affected neighboring East African states like Somalia and Sudan?
It just goes to show the fragility where they go through economic growth and good trends, but that violence can really explode some of that, particularly in the weaker states where the institutions are not well developed. And when a crisis hits, they really don't have the institutional capacity to respond quickly. Initially, the crisis led to refugees spilling over the border seeking safety. But I think it also raised concerns about instability in the region as a whole. And also, it affects it in terms of a market for arms and interrupting. In Kenya's case, since it was the economic hub of the region, it stopped some of the transportation lines where other countries depend on Kenya for imports of some of their food and fuel. In a lot of instances, when countries have violence and you have displaced people or refugees, they flee into the bush or there are no agencies which can help them. In the case of Somalia, of course, some of the insurgents are directly targeting the aid groups. The same thing in Darfur. And so the society is too poor and the institutions too weak to really respond to those needs. Sudan is really an institutionally very, very weak state whose only good news is the oil price and the boom that's taking place in Khartoum. But in terms of managing conflict, Sudan hasn't done a good job of that as well. Now, Zimbabwe was until recently on a slow decline and sort of the hyperinflation, and that's even a very mild word to describe the utter ruination of the economy, has quickened in pace. And since the first election, I think the deterioration of Zimbabwe has increased.
It's interesting to note that 7 out of the top 10 countries on your list are in sub-Saharan Africa. Sudan surpassed Zimbabwe as the second most failed state on your list this year. Why did that happen?
Well, I think it's a combination of Darfur worsening and people being very unsure of southern Sudan and what's going on there. Keep in mind that each year's index is based on the data from the previous year. So things that occurred this year in calendar 2008 are not captured in the 2008 index. It's based on 2007 data.
It was interesting to note, though, that Zimbabwe, with a 150,000% inflation rate, according to the IMF, continues to show the greatest economic decline in the world, but that is just one factor on your list. How important is it to monitor weak states and test their resiliency to withstand disasters, crises, and other challenges?
Well, I think it's very important because you really don't know if you're making progress if you have no benchmarks of success. So until recently, people were using anecdotal or episodic or very theoretical ways of trying to assess state stability, economic decline, and so forth that wrap up in terms of the whole conflict risk assessment. So we feel it's extremely important to measure conflict risk and vulnerability because it gives you early warning and it also gives you a way to assess whether your intervention, whether it's economic or political, is having the desired effect.
I wanted to ask you about the excessive rise in oil prices. It has enriched oil companies and producers around the world, yet two African countries, Nigeria and Chad, are ranked 18th and 4th, respectively, on your list of failed states. In Nigeria, it seems to be the uneven distribution of wealth and the disparity among those who produce the wealth and those who gain the profits that's hurting the country. What about Chad?
Chad's the same thing. When you have great wealth that's not being distributed for the benefit of the people, you basically have a problem in good governance and usually corruption. And Chad is even more underdeveloped than Nigeria, and it doesn't have the wealth that Nigeria has, nor does it have the size of the population. But both are victims of the same curse, if you will, of oil, which basically represents windfall profits that come through extractive processes which the government has not used in order to create jobs and develop and put into health and education and welfare. So it's not so much that the oil companies are getting wealthy, but the people who are governing these states are personally getting wealthy. And you're creating basically an elite class, very, very separate from the benefit of the masses.
Would you say that the spillover from the Darfur crisis that's affecting Chad a great deal also contributed to their fall in the rankings?
Absolutely. Oh, yes. Rankings? Those conflicts are very closely linked.
Of the four African countries that suffered major election controversies over the past few years, Ethiopia, Nigeria, Kenya, and Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe is way up on the list, but Ethiopia, whose turmoil occurred around 3 years ago, is ranked 16th, Nigeria 18th, and Kenya 26th. What does that tell you about your rankings?
Well, you cannot look at the rankings based on one event alone or even one indicator. These are aggregate rankings. And so the profile for each state is different. So two states may have equally bad elections, but one state has progressed economically and the other one has not. One state has a large population, the other one does not. There are all kinds of factors. So we try to be very holistic in doing this. And none of these rankings are driven by any one event or any one indicator.
Now, there is some good news in your ranking. Several African countries continue to make progress and move down on your list, showing that they're getting stronger and healthier. Ivory Coast and Liberia are notable examples. What can you tell us about those?
Well, the ones that improve the most, we asked ourselves, what do they have in common? And we saw that they're all under UN peacekeeping missions, which shows that the UN peacekeeping operations are having an impact. And we were very pleased to see that. In the case of Liberia, since the election of Ellen Johnson, Liberia has been making great strides. And the other countries under a UN mandate are also improving, and that's good news.
Yes, except the Democratic Republic of Congo is number 6 on your list, which has a sizable UN presence as well.
Yes, and that's a much larger country, both in territory and in population. So while there's some progress being made, the Kivus are still quite unstable, and they haven't really had the chance to stabilize the entire country, and that's what that reflects.
Moving down the list, if you take in all of the top 20 countries, 11 out of those 20 are located in sub-Saharan Africa. I wanted to talk about inflation a little bit. In countries that have events and soaring prices, weakened countries are particularly affected. How is that?
Well, you know, it used to be thought that Africa actually would be insulated from any downturn in the global economy because it wasn't as well integrated into the global economy. But when the inflation rates affect fuel and food, it affects everybody. So I think that was a myth, and that what we're seeing now is that Africa is actually the most vulnerable because so many people in Africa live at a subsistence level or live on a dollar or two a day. And so we're finding that the world economy and the downturn that's happening, while we're all concerned with our own benefits and our own welfare, there are some people that are going to be hit much harder than we thought, and Africa certainly is part of that group.
Are there any other Brighton pictures that you've noted for Africa? You mentioned the UN presence in several states. Are there any other factors that have helped certain countries show an upturn on the list?
Well, I think that there is a drift, however uneven, toward more open government in Africa. Their election controversies have been severe in four countries, but there have been more elections in Africa than in the past. In that sense, Africa is ahead of the Middle East, where you haven't even had very many election controversies because you haven't even had elections. So that's a good thing. The other thing I think is very encouraging is the growth of civil society in Africa. And this has been enabled by information technology and the growth of the Internet, and people really know what's going on in the rest of the world, and they want the same thing for themselves. And so I think that helps civil society organize. The downside of that, of course, is there is a tremendous youth bulge in Africa. There's rising unemployment because there isn't as much economic development, and so that could lead to more instability. And, of course, there are a handful of states that are actually quite stable and doing very well, like Ghana, Senegal, Botswana, Mauritius, These are countries which don't fit the negative profile and which are quietly and within their own borders making some good progress. So it's a very mixed picture.
Has food been the dominant factor leading to the decline of most failed states on your list?
I would say it's been the dominant factor. It's actually risen this year as an issue, as well as fuel prices, and both are important, accounting for some of the economic indicators, but also for the indicator on provision of public services. A lot of the states that are hard hit this year actually produced enough food to eat or were able to import food to eat. But the combination of high fuel prices and food shortages has really hit some of the poorer countries pretty badly this year.
Your report also mentions that the implosion in the U.S. subprime market for housing affected currencies around the globe.
Mm-hmm.
Did it do it enough to make food prices soar and the oil prices to be affected?
I think it actually worsened it. I think that a lot of people have pointed out that there's kind of a perfect storm occurring, and that climate change, other factors have all combined, and then the currency problem from the American subprime crisis just worsened an already bad situation.
How are your figures and rankings used both here in the U.S. and abroad?
Well, it's used in many different contexts. First of all, it's used as an early warning tool so that people can see what the hot spots are around the world and see if they can do something to mitigate the pressures that are building up in particular states. Secondly, it's a very good tool for economic assistance to try and make sure that the assistance that you're providing to particular countries is not actually inspiring more conflict. If you only use economic measures, you may, in fact, be favoring certain people over another. You may be trying to throw money at a problem when you need more reconciliation and conflict resolution techniques. It also gives you a map to show which of the drivers that are most powerful in particular states. It can also be used, and this is probably the most important utility, by the state governments themselves, if they're not oppressive or autocratic states, in trying to assess what they should do within their own societies. It is kind of a feedback mechanism for them to check how they're doing.
Have your indicators changed over time? Have you been forced to reevaluate the types of criteria that you use to measure your countries?
We did a lot of testing before we did this index. For years we had been working on this before we actually thought of putting it out as an actual index, so that we had tested it already, and those 12 indicators are pretty solid. What does change, however, what we call the measures of those indicators or sub-indicators. So, for example, if you are measuring demographic trends, there might be things in the demographic trends of societies that you hadn't anticipated, and those can change. For example, the impact of the food and fuel crisis on the demographics of a particular country, or a youth bulge or an age bulge or natural disasters or environmental problems. And the measures of those indicators can change, and we have been refining